Coming to you from the ancestral territory of the Anishinaabe and the area occupied by the Mississaugas of the Credit First Nation, this is Earth Matters. I'm your host, Lawson Hunter. Earth Matters examines the impacts we have on the environment and the natural world around us. Seeking solutions, reporting on news and events, presenting positive alternatives, and highlighting the steps others are taking, we hope to inspire you to join the many others who are working to preserve and protect a healthy planet. I'm speaking with Julia Langer, CEO of the Atmospheric Fund. Welcome to Earth Matters, Julia. I want to start off by asking you to tell us about the Atmospheric Fund and what it does.
Well, great. Thanks for having me. The Atmospheric Fund, formerly we're a non-profit corporation, but we were established in 1991, so 28 years ago, before climate change was really headline news, to advance local solutions to climate change and air pollution. And it really started, there was a big conference that was in Toronto in 1988. It was opened by then Prime Minister Brian Mulroney. It was moderated by the President of Norway, Gro Harlem Brundtland, from the Brundtland Commission. And a few city councillors went to that and walked out of there saying, okay, this is a big global issue, but what are we going to do about it at home? And so there was a sale of a city property, a surplus property, a jail farm where they used to sort of send medium bad people. And they sold that. And at the time, Mayor Eggleton, now Senator Eggleton, said, okay, if we just give that money to like a city department, it'll be gone. And this is going to be a long-term play in terms of solving this problem. So they created an endowment. And so we basically take the funds. It was originally a $23 million endowment, and we invest them in alignment with our mandate as much as possible. And we use the returns on investment, so just the interest, to support projects that are innovative, leading edge ideas and opportunities for reducing carbon emissions in Toronto. And then a few years ago, we got an enhanced endowment from the province of Ontario, and our mandate expanded to the greater Toronto Hamilton area. So we are an investor. We are a grant maker so that we can seed fund interesting ideas and good ideas. And we do a lot of demonstration and projects to really show that there are solutions to climate change locally and in cities, because that's where 50% of Canada's emissions originate. We really need to do a bunch of heavy lifting to actually reduce those carbon emissions and benefit from the opportunities that provides. So improved health outcomes, better mobility solutions, job creation in the low carbon economy. So we can talk a bit more about some of the projects that we've done, but that in a nutshell is we're very practical. We have this wonderful asset that we can work with to help move things along from idea to a proven solution to mainstream implementation.
Sounds fantastic. Now, obviously, over the 28 years, you've got a perspective that many other smaller organizations don't have. And I understand you sometimes act as, if I can use the term, a bigger brother for smaller organizations, bring them, and you're very focused on collaborative efforts and bringing the best out in what's there. So let's start with the whole idea of using some of the funds that you have to help promote and support the smaller organizations. Mm-hmm. How does that work? How can people apply and everything?
Well, we're a very small organization. The point is not for the Atmospheric Fund to be a big organization. It's for us to be able to help innovate and incubate and move, accelerate the things that citizens, academics, businesses, cities themselves are doing to reduce emissions. So we're sort of that, a bit of a catalyst incubator, and we hardly ever do anything alone. I would say we never do anything alone. So we've always been looking for and always will be interested in the ideas and opportunities that organizations throughout the region have for reducing carbon. And it doesn't mean that you have to be an environmental organization. We work with health organizations. We work with unions. We work with developers. We work with the municipalities. So every part of society, every player has to be part of the solution. And sometimes ideas get stuck, you know. So you got an idea and there's a policy barrier, or you've got this great, you know, technology, but, you know, it's more expensive right now than the current, you know, business as usual. So what TAF can do is help find where the barriers are and what it will take to eliminate those. What are some maybe innovative financial solutions that can actually help move things along? If it's a matter of just people don't understand the opportunities, some engagement and educational programs. It really, somebody famously said, there's no magic bullet to climate change. There's only magic buckshot. We have to do so many things. And that's what keeps it really interesting at the Atmospheric Fund. We're always in touch with different types of organizations and different ideas because we need to kind of just keep that pace and keep the solutions moving along in order to reach our climate targets. And those are very ambitious. It's not going to happen overnight. We just have to keep working at it.
Right. Now, obviously, climate change is a very big issue, and it overwhelms a lot of people, and they throw their hands up and say, well, what can I do? I'm looking at your vision statement, and it says, our ultimate goal is to reduce carbon emissions by 80% by 2050 in the Greater Toronto and Hamilton area. So why have you focused on the emissions? Why are the greenhouse gases important?
Well, this is what we were created to do. The Atmospheric Fund's mandate, which is established in legislation, is to advance local solutions to climate change. And so, you know, that's why we're here. And so our job is to parse that out, to break that down into, okay, where are the sources of emissions? And therefore, what are the solutions? And when you look at a city, there's really only four big sources. Buildings, so because of the natural gas that we use for space heating, the electricity that we use to sort of keep everything on, there's emissions associated with that. Transportation, so the tailpipes, so the internal combustion engine, you can't burn gasoline or diesel without making carbon emissions. Waste, so when we put garbage in a landfill, it creates methane. That's a very strong greenhouse gas. And then thirdly, even, you know, there's a different mix in different cities, but industrial operations. And so that's, you know, when we say 80% reduction by 2050, that's what the scientists tell us we need to be getting to in order to avoid dangerous climate change. And the impacts of climate change are being felt in cities most acutely. So that's on the one hand, you know, the target, but okay, let's break this down and be practical about what do we do in each of these areas. Buildings. First of all, existing buildings. Energy efficiency is the biggest, the fastest, and actually the cheapest way to reduce emissions. And so the Atmospheric Fund has really focused in on energy efficiency retrofits in buildings as a core aspect of our work. And we look at it from a policy perspective, a technology opportunity, financing and investment opportunity. And we've had a lot of success, but there's a huge way to go. Like, we have hundreds of thousands of buildings in the GTHA, and we need to retrofit pretty much all of them. Mm-hmm. And when we build new buildings, we have to make sure that they are really, really efficient, because otherwise you lock in carbon emissions for, you know, 50, 100 plus years. Mm-hmm. So buildings is a really big focus, and luckily, it's got so many benefits when you start tackling them this from an energy efficiency perspective. There's a great job creation opportunity in the retrofit space. In fact, energy efficiency doesn't cost; it pays. So you have to invest in it, but in fact, it actually gives you a return on investment. And as an investor, we put money into financing retrofits, and we earn a return on that. So this is a growth opportunity in our region, and it has benefits for the tenants, for the owners, for the job market, and financially. Transportation, there's a hierarchy of solutions. So short trips, let's get walking and be healthier, and cycling infrastructure is starting to make it safer for people to cycle short trips. Transit, there's a huge build out that needs to happen in our region. And all sorts of shared mobility options are starting to emerge, so mass transit versus micro transit. And then, of course, electrification of transportation of vehicles, both in the public and the individual vehicle space. That's going to reduce emissions enormously. And frankly, you know, electrification, it is starting to take off from a very small base. It's growing very quickly, but we need to accelerate that, and have our target is to see 40% of all new vehicles, vehicle purchases be electric by 2030. And the emission reduction from that is astounding. So, you know, and on the industrial side, I mean, it's much more bespoke. There's different, you know, different types of industrial operations. But we're supporting a project right now in Hamilton with the Chamber of Commerce and the Hamilton Environmental Industrial Council that is looking at capturing waste heat from the industries and using it for heating, for space heating. So, and you just have to, when you start breaking it down at the source level, you see that those solutions exist. And your point about being, you know, sort of, we need the solutions. Like the doom and gloom, it's there. Like it's there in the back of our minds. Everybody knows that climate change is a problem. But when you start looking at these interesting technology solutions, the financing opportunities, the, you know, how we can have a circular economy, like not waste things like heat or cool. This is when you start getting excited about that transition to a low carbon economy, that and looking at the success opportunities.
Going back a little bit, you mentioned that the origins of the Atmospheric Fund started in Toronto with some grant money from the city. There was obviously some federal support there, provincial support. Government plays a very important role. And we're living at times where sometimes the government has a different issue or a different view on different things. And obviously we're in Ontario, and the Ontario Conservative government is pulling back on certain things like conservation efforts and subsidies, either for electric vehicles or for building, you know, small residential changes to the energy efficiency. One of the questions I want to ask people is, how do you keep going? How do you keep positive? How do you keep pushing ahead?
Well, the opportunities don't go away. And sometimes the business case can be improved with some incentives, but you know, frankly, we have to also look at mainstreaming some of these solutions. So, you know, we always keep our eye on the carbon and what those opportunities are. And the mandate, our mandate doesn't go away, and we feel that the mandate to serve, you know, the utilities need to serve their customers. The government needs to actually be looking at, you know, where those cost-effective opportunities are. And things go in cycles, but you know, sometimes it's harder and sometimes it's easier, but the reality of climate change is not going away, and nobody's denying that. Sometimes things will get shuffled around. You know, right now, your point about the conservation programs, they've been on the rate base, so they've been in your electricity bill and your gas bill, and we know that they're very, very cost effective. I mean, this is the cheapest, conservation is the cheapest energy that's available to us. The government seems to be proposing to shift that off the utility bill and onto the tax bill. But, you know, those investments are still really good investments. And whether you see it on your bill or whether it's in the tax base, you know, that has to... I'd rather see it on the utility bill, because then people can say, oh, look at the good value that I got for this. But, you know, sometimes there are political realities. The reality that conservation is extremely cheap, very valuable to a society and to individuals, does not go away. And that, you know, that's the math that we'll continue to do. We'll continue investing in energy efficiency, and we see way more interest within the financial sector. So even pension funds are looking at putting their money into lower carbon risk opportunities. There's this whole responsible investing interest. So we feel that money is going to start flowing into things like energy efficiency. It's already flowing very quickly into renewables, unfortunately not in Ontario, but, you know, you see provinces even like Alberta, where they're getting renewable energy at unbelievably low prices because the cost of solar and wind energy keeps going down, down, down. So in the end, the market is going to actually provide those kinds of solutions, and it's like electric vehicles. It's kind of an unstoppable trend. It would go faster with with certain kinds of policies and government support, and we certainly support and advocate that. But the market trends are really there.
And you must be encouraged by the federal government, who are sort of putting more money towards incentives. So are you encouraged by the federal government's recent news?
Yes, and I was going to, you mentioned that we've had sort of municipal and provincial support, which is true, but I did want to mention that this week, we have actually received a federal contribution to TAF and our endowment, as well as to creating six other TAF-like centers across the country, because there's really a recognition that the solutions to climate change, and well, because the sources of climate change are urban, that you need on-the-ground capacity like TAF has to take those ideas from sort of idea, innovation, incubation, and then de-risk them and help them scale, and which is kind of our core, our business and our core mandate. And so having that contribution from the federal government is really going to enhance TAF's capacity in the Greater Toronto Hamilton area. And the budget also contained some very important contributions and supports for electric vehicle adoption, and also for energy efficiency in a range of markets. We have to kind of be able to work together with all of the players, and it's a bit of a bundling exercise. Sometimes that's what happens here at TAF, is that because carbon is our central focus, we can look at what's available from the many, many players, and there's a lot of interest in this, and stack it all up and bundle it all up to make for a really strong value proposition. And you know, we have that ability to be able to be a bit of a first investor. So some of the investments that TAF is making and has made in the past, like we were the first investor in AutoShare, which was the first car sharing service in Toronto, like way before Zipcar and all of that, when everybody thought, that's a crazy idea. So, you know, sometimes you have to invest in those crazy ideas because you gotta see whether, you know, people will accept it and how that will work and will the world end if you do it like this. And then, you know, look at, they've been bought by Enterprise, which is the biggest, one of the biggest car rental agencies in the world. So it's now mainstreamed it. We were the first investor in a program called Smart Commute, which is now being used throughout the Greater Toronto Hamilton area, administered by Metrolinx, which was this crazy idea that you should share your car, your drive to work. And to create mechanisms to link drivers and riders through the workplace. So you know, we incubated a bunch of policies that are now like formal government policies for energy reporting, for all buildings to have to report their energy so that we could actually compare buildings. TAF was the first and biggest funder of the campaign to phase out coal, which is the single largest emission reduction action in all of North America, and has been a major contributor to having Toronto's emissions reduced by 33% since 1990. So, you know, you kind of have to look at, you know, all those things. They might seem all disconnected and different, but they are all very focused on reducing carbon.
You've mentioned a number of the different projects that TAF is involved in very well. I want to turn also to the fact that, again, in the collaborative spirit that TAF operates, you have publications and reports that are available for people to download, look at, and learn from your experience and learn from the experience of others. Can you tell me a little bit about the publications and reports that you have on your website?
So we have a very strong commitment to being a learning organization, to knowledge transfer, and to just sharing what we learn. We're a public agency, so you know it's part of our duty to disclose a lot about, you know, what we find, and also to have that freedom a bit to, you have to take some risks in order to get some returns, and you have to be prepared, you know, to fail a bit. Like, and some people say failing fast is the best thing, right? Because then you don't repeat those mistakes. So a lot of our reports that you'll find on our website at TAF.ca are case studies. So projects that we've either funded through a grant, or through our internal demonstration programs, or invested in, is like what was the idea, what was the process that the proponent went through, what worked, what didn't, and how can you replicate this and learn from this. And so we have case studies on all the retrofits that we've undertaken. So in co-ops, in we've retrofitted the Harborfront Center. We have done solar thermal projects. We had the biggest solar thermal project in all of North America at one point. Now we've been really overtaken because we were very early at this, but there were 100 solar thermal installations in the east end of Toronto. And that was like, there weren't even companies that knew how to install these properly. In fact, City Hall didn't even have a mechanism for providing a permit. We had to invent that. Who repairs these things? We had to train them, you know. So sometimes when you're at the innovation end of the ecosystem, you have to be inventing. You're basically inventing, and we're very dedicated to capturing those learnings and those lessons. So, because the real point is not to have pilots, the point is to use pilots and demonstrations to get scale, adoption at scale. So you'll see some case studies. We have a lot of policy work that we've done. So what are the best policies for accelerating urban carbon reduction? And how did, you know, what was the process that we went through, and you know, what were some of the issues and mistakes and then successes? We do inventories of carbon emissions in the City of Toronto and now in the Greater Toronto and Hamilton area. So we can track where are we at in terms of our emissions reduction. And so, you know, everybody's welcome to use those. We have a great blog as well, which are kind of more snippets about the kind of work that we're doing. Some of our most popular blogs lately have been about heat pumps. We're a bit nerdy. That has been very interesting to a lot of people, because there's a lot of buzz about how can heat pumps replace natural gas and certainly replace electrically heated buildings much more cost effectively. And it's kind of an interesting technology, so people, you know, read about that.
You may be a bit nerdy, but we need that. And also, you're very good at explaining it on the ground level so that the average citizen can understand it. They may have heard about these things in the news, but to see to read a case study or to examine how others have instituted these policies and procedures is very helpful. I want to talk very briefly, because we're running out of time, a little bit about the Low Carbon Cities Canada. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Well, yes, I was just mentioning the support that the federal government has just offered both enhance the Atmospheric Fund's endowment so that we can actually expand and deepen our work in the Greater Toronto Hamilton area. But Low Carbon Cities Canada really emerged from a question that we asked a couple of years ago to other cities to colleagues and others in cities across the country. You know, do you have capacity to help innovate and incubate and accelerate local climate solutions? Do you want more? Do you need more? Like what? It was just sort of an open question, and what emerged from that was that there was a really big need for what I would call TAF-like capacity in other cities. Things get stuck, you know, great ideas sometimes just don't go anywhere because they face barriers of whether they're financial barriers or policy barriers or just understanding barriers or all of the above barriers. And so our job is really that a bit of a hand-holding, a bit of a problem-solving, you know, just we have a very special relationship with the cities to be able to engage with them to help accelerate solutions. And so what emerged was a proposal for to incubate and capitalize six other centers across the country: Halifax, Montreal, Ottawa, Calgary, Edmonton, and Vancouver, in addition to TAF in the Greater Toronto Hamilton area. And so in the budget was a commitment of $183 million to Low Carbon Cities Canada, which will allow us to really help move some of these solutions from idea to action and mainstream implementation. So it's a very welcome contribution, and it's kind of couched inside a much bigger contribution to the Federation of Canadian Municipalities, who is our partner in this, for energy efficiency in a variety of sectors and for the electric vehicle acceleration program. So this budget really did have a lot of focus on climate and climate action. So we're happy to be a part of that.
Good news indeed. I hope that our listeners will be eager to find out more, they can go to your website, taf.ca, that stands for the Atmospheric Fund. .ca. Julia Langer, CEO of the Atmospheric Fund, thank you very much for joining us on Earth Matters, and continued success.
Thank you. Quite a pleasure, and I hope we can chat again.